If you are frustrated or unhappy about the role that HR plays in a lot of businesses, and you're trying to understand why often it's seen as a nanny or like a substandard function that doesn't really have a big say and doesn't really make a big difference and is kind of just supporting some kind of happiness programs or employee engagement rather than making a true crucial difference to the value creation, then check out this episode because I'm going to dig deep and I'm going to look at the root cause of this problem and how HR can re-establish their position to be taken more seriously. Good evening, you lovely people. This is the Markup News. I'm Mark Poppenborg. Today is the 31st of March 2021. And before I get started, a quick note. Some of you have been commenting on my introduction because they love it. Some of you said it's too long, and some of you haven't made any mention about it. So I just want to give you a little tool here. If you want to skip my introduction and you want to get straight into the content, then you can do that by clicking on the chapters below in the video window, provided you are on YouTube. If you're watching this in a different video app, or if you are listening to this as a podcast, if you go in the description, I've got chapters and I've got timestamps, and you can't click on them unless you're in YouTube, but you can just navigate to that time and then you will be able to start wherever you desire to start. And with that said, I've kind of legitimized a bit more of an introduction because, again, you can just skip ahead. And today is quite a special day for us because today, on Wednesday, the 31st of March 2021, our semester within the Intrinsify Academy came to an end, which means that not only do we have more time at our disposal, which is nice, also a few hundred new graduates left our academy and they will be hopefully advertising an idea of management and leadership and organizational change and organizational design that I talk about here, which we are obviously very happy about because it means, hopefully means, more positive change. And also today is a special day because this morning I released a new episode within my German podcast. So for all of you German listeners, my podcast, which is also called Markup, not Markup News, has a new episode, and it is with my mentor and dear friend Gerhard Voland. Now, some of you I know him. He's I almost said famous. Unfortunately, not a lot of people know him, but he is famous for his understanding of social systems. He has taught me an awful lot. He's held my hand in my learning process. He is definitely one of my most important mentors. And those of you who know him probably only know him for his content, which is sad because he's a very interesting person. And if you want to get to know Gerhard from a slightly different angle, then I recommend you have a listen because we went deep and I asked Gerhard about him as a person. And I learned some stuff that I didn't know before and I had a really interesting conversation with him. In fact, I quite enjoyed re-listening it to myself the other day because it's just fun. It's a fun listen. So go ahead and check it out. It's in all of the places that podcasts are published in. So, as I said, I've got more time at my disposal now that the semester is over, and I'm going to be dedicating some of that time towards this show. I'm going to try singling out some more articles that are trying to capture your attention, although they shouldn't be, and give them a second perspective. And today, before we all go into our well-deserved Easter break, which we will be doing as well, by the way, so there's going to be no production next week, and we will be back in 2 weeks' time for the next episode. So before we do that, today's episode is addressing all of you HR managers out there, not only actually, all of you who want to improve the way HR is organized within companies. And especially you HR guys, especially if you are frustrated about your role in the company, about your reputation, about what influence you have, about how you are perceived and how you can improve on all of those frontiers. That's what we're going to talk about today. And to start this off, I need to tell you a story. So This was a few weeks ago, and I was approached by a senior HR manager, so a chief HR officer, CHRO, as they are called today. And he'd been following my work for a while, and he saw a real opportunity for implementing some of those thoughts and those tools to make a positive change within the company. And he wanted to engage me, or rather our consultancy firm. And then something really interesting happened. So I was on my first call to him, and after we spoke about the challenges this company has, and after I had, you know, had a bit of an opportunity to understand what they do, I wasn't really able to dig deep yet. Then he said, "Mark, I need to tell you something. I can't actually bring you into my company." And I thought, is this another instance of me being too radical? Have I said some provocative stuff again? And maybe some of his colleagues have already heard that, and I'm just not compatible to the business culture? No, that's not what it was. The emphasis was on, "I can't bring you into this company." And what he said is that, "I can bring you into the company, but the problem will be that if I do that, you will be stigmatized as an appendix to HR, as an appendix to me. And if that happens, then you won't be effective. You won't stand the chance, because HR in this firm is seen as a nanny. No one says it publicly. No one complains about it. No one tries to change anything about it. But everyone subtly knows that HR is effectively a nanny, and everyone acts upon that narrative. We don't get asked, you know, when it's about true value creation, when we're trying to solve deep problems of our business, we get asked when employees complain. You know, we are here to clear up the mess. We don't create value. We don't support value creation. We hold hands. We heal. But we don't get invited to the big boys table." And I was pretty blown away by him saying that. Not because of what he said. That's true for many companies, and that's what I'm going to talk about in this episode. I was impressed for the fact that he said it himself. And that's because that's not only selfless, it's also, it pays testament to a lot of foresight. Because he knew, in order to make this whole thing work, in order to make a real significant change, he needed to find a way for me, or rather my consultancy firm, to be able to be seen in a different way, to be able to retain our reputation, rather than having that reputation being damaged by being seen as his companion, if you like. And this, of course, says a lot of stuff in itself, right? It's quite a statement that the company is implicitly making by him delivering that message. And that brings me straight to the story I want to cover today. It's not one story, it's not one publication. It's this topic, and I've been trying to tie together a few different publications, but also stories that I experienced, to offer some perspective on the role of HR in the 21st century. And I think it's worth starting with where we stand today, with understanding the status quo. And I came across a tweet recently by Gary Hamel, the famous management thinker that I covered, I think, in my first episode. And he summarized this whole dilemma in one single tweet that he posted in early February. So he said, "Sad but not surprising, in a recent IBM study, only 16% of CEOs said they regarded the CHRO, so the chief resource, a human resource officer, as a crucial C-suite partner, while 57% named the CFO and 39% the CIO or the CTO. Are CEOs to blame, or has HR lost its way?" And that's a very good question, because what he's saying, in other words, is that HR is not perceived as a crucial function to the business, and that's alarming. And I think it should be alarming, and I think this should change, or at least we should look at HR from a different perspective. Because think about how good it could be if HR took on a role which is seen as some function actively supporting value creation. And I know that some of you HR guys might be, you know, jumping at me now and saying, "Well, that's what we do, that's what we're trying to do." But the truth is that often there isn't a real deep impact on business. Like, imagine HR was playing a crucial role where imagine people said something like, we've got a problem here with our churn rate and we need to do something about it. And we think the best first step to take is to approach HR because we think there's a way we could potentially reorganize ourselves a bit. And we know that HR is the best function to talk to because they have a deep understanding of effective change. They have a deep understanding of the social mechanics. And most importantly, they understand how value creation can be affected. They don't have to understand every single deep angle of value creation, but they understand how social structures and management structures and management practices have an impact on value creation. Imagine HR was seen as that function, as a function that makes, you know, quick and substantial change, deep change, and that really understands these mechanics. And I know this is the case in some businesses where HR is organized and seen in a very different way, but on average, let's be honest, it blatantly isn't, right? HR hasn't got that reputation. HR doesn't do things that crucially support value creation. If the whole house is on fire, HR isn't the function that gets called. And I don't say that to pee anyone off. I'm saying that because I think something needs to be done about it. And because I think that every HR manager and every HR employee is just as smart and just as capable as everyone else in the business. It's just that we aren't organizing this in the right way. And I think that, I know a lot of HR managers, and we have a lot of HR managers visit our academy and we train them. And most of what I see is that in their companies, HR has gradually gone down this very slippery slope of earning themselves an image that is really hard to shake off again. And in most organizations, this image, this implicit image, when you talk about HR, is that it's associated to a group of people that is managing the facade, right? It's they are applying cosmetics. They are looking after people's well-being. But they're not really relevant to supporting the generation of customer value. And I came across an article recently that is a demonstration of this slippery slope. And it's so bizarre. It's to me, it's the pinnacle of HR ludicrousness. And when I read it, I had to call Lars, my business partner, first thing, because we often joke about what management might come up with next, you know, in this whole long list of ridiculous measures of trying to improve stuff that doesn't actually improve stuff. And so check this out, right? This article is from January this year, and even the title is a great start to the whole thing. The title is 4 Happiness Boosting Benefits Your Company Should Offer Employees in 2021. Here we go, you know, silver bullet, 4 happiness boosting benefits. And they didn't apply last year, they apply in 2021. Things have changed. That's, to me, that in itself is alarming. If you have this view, maybe it's just clickbait, of course, but let's have a look at the content. It was published in the human resource section of entrepreneur.com, in fact, entrepreneur.com Europe, and they're giving 4 tips. And these 4 tips are just great. So number one is a managed fertility benefit. Not unmanaged, managed. Meaning your employer makes sure, quote unquote, clinical experts connect with employees throughout their fertility journey, recommending the most appropriate network doctors, medical treatments, and drugs purchased at the lowest unit cost. And the opening line of this first tip is even more fantastic. It reads, some couples who struggle with infertility are willing to mortgage their homes, literally, in order to start a family. With that demand in mind, employers across multiple economic sectors and regions now help sponsor fertility treatments for employees and their partners. Ooh, let me translate that. What they are saying is, there's couples desperate to get pregnant. We can capitalize on their desperation by paying for their fertility programs, thereby increasing their dependency to us as an employer. That's what it says. Like, this is just, I mean, where have we arrived at? That we are, it's just brilliant. I mean, I really don't know what to say. And I understand that there's, this is the Europe section of the entrepreneur.com. We're not talking about the health system in the States. I understand that this is coming from good intentions and it sounds great on the surface, but this is not taking responsibility for people's happiness. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. So tip number two is about mental health benefits, which I spoke about in another episode. I think episode number two it was. And I'm going to link that up here so you can have a look at it yourself. And I argued that mental health benefits often cause more harm than good, and that they are camouflaged as this great positive thing that helps people get past their desperation and their depression sometimes, whereas in actual fact, it doesn't actually address the root cause of the problem. Number four, tip number four is tuition assistance. I'm going to skip that one. Number three to me is the icing on the cake in this article. This article promotes pet insurance as the solution to the problem. Pet insurance is the new thing, ladies and gentlemen. And the entrepreneur is not the only outlet that advertises this idea and that is convinced that employers should now, you know, not only be looking after their staff. Nope, we are now looking after your pets as well. We are extending our responsibility and are aiming for your dog and your cat. You might have a spider at home. You might have a rattlesnake, and don't worry, your employer is covering it. Like, it's going to be, it could be quite fun to brainstorm about what they will come up with next year in 2022. Maybe employers will be paying for the plants in your house because that gives you more oxygen to breathe and it looks better, and therefore your work will be more productive or something like that. Or they're going to pay for your gardener. I mean, where have we? This is just, I don't know what to say. And I know what some of you might be thinking. Some of you might be thinking, Mark, you're making fun of something that is important. You are being cynical in a very unjust way. Like, if everyone just focuses on, you know, the business and no one thinks about the people, then what about the people? You know, no one considers their needs. No one takes responsibility for their suffering. And there is a lot of suffering that they have to endure. Who looks after the employees? You know, businesses have become more and more money driven, more and more shareholder value driven, more and more short-sighted, more greedy, more inhumane. And here am I, you know, capitalizing on the cynicism of this, laughing at the last resort of humaneness in business. Is that fair? I don't know. Maybe I've got it wrong, right? Maybe it should be HR's role to tackle this. Maybe it's not HR's role that we should be looking down upon. Maybe it's the other C-suites that are taking business too seriously, right? Maybe I have it all wrong and they have it all wrong, and we need to defend HR's effort in protecting the ordinary employee. It's true, after all, that there is a lot of suffering in companies. There's a lot of unhappiness. And you could argue, well, if there's a lot of unhappiness, shouldn't the employer be responsible for fixing that? Yes, but not in the way suggested, is my answer. Because what always gets misunderstood is that all of these measures, they don't address the root cause of the problem. What they do is they create temporary relief or temporary pleasure, but they aren't systemic. And they wear off really quickly, pretty much instantly. So what they don't actually support happiness, they reduce pain. And even that they only do temporarily. And they increase dependency, because you don't want to miss your opportunity to work for an employer that has all those benefits. And worst of all, they camouflage the true problem. Because the true problem is that work itself is become so unattractive. You know, employers are trying to compensate for the suffering that results from work itself being unattractive. And they kind of need to tempt you with other reasons to stay or to start in the first place. So in that sense, HR as a function is cleaning up the mess that an inappropriate organizational structure and inappropriate organizational practices are causing. And let me give you an example of how this, to make this a bit more tangible. A friend of mine works for a rather small marketing agency in London. And I think they employ about 100 people, and they belong to a much bigger group that employs hundreds of people. And he deals with his clients on a daily basis. So he has a really good understanding of what his clients need. And whenever there's a call to make, you know, an investment to decide on, he's the one best to judge what is right for the client and for his own business, because he's so close to the problem. But he's not allowed to make those decisions. He makes proposals, but senior management decides on pretty much everything there. And if he has to travel to his clients, pre-COVID obviously, he needs to ask for permission. And then he gets given very narrow guidelines to tell him how to travel, you know, what means of transport he's allowed to use and how much he's allowed to spend for his trip. So he hasn't really got true responsibility. He can't even make hiring decisions in his team. They are all made centrally. So essentially he's being made, on paper, he's being made responsible for something, but he hasn't got any true responsibility. He hasn't got any true ownership. And guess what? He hates it. He's overworked. He basically changes his employer every 2 to 3 years, but because they're all the same, it doesn't really make a big difference. So he always ends up in the same mess. And of course, he's not the only one who's unhappy. His colleagues are too. And this is being witnessed by senior management in the company. And as a consequence, they've now come up with this great new system. It's called Employee Engagement System. And I mean, that's not new. A lot of companies have something like that. But this one is particularly special because they have decided to occupy 8 members of staff that spend 100% of their time with coming up with measures to motivate the staff, and measures targeted at evaluating the compatibility of staff to the company values, exposing them to loads of reviews, and of course throwing all these happiness boosters at them, hoping for more happiness within the companies. 8 employees full-time. That's 8%. That is probably equates to about 8% of the cost that this company has. If you take out the traveling costs in a marketing agency, that's pretty much what you have. You've got a human resource cost. Can it get any more ridiculous? Like, I'm not making this up. This has become quite normal. This is not an example from some kind of alien company. This has become very normal within the HR world, and it's almost as if we'd gotten better at managing benefits than at managing work itself, right? We're streamlined, we've professionalized this industry of creating more and more benefits rather than understanding how work actually works and how people can serve the customer and how that has a positive impact on their happiness. Because people's happiness levels would be just fine if they were actually able to work. But they aren't. You know, amidst all of these distractions, no one actually gets round to really working. They're just consumed with reviews and KPIs they have to maintain and reports they have to deliver. So no wonder everyone's getting really fed up with their employer, and they want to change their employer every now and then. And HR is trying to come up with some kind of measures to tie them, to make them dependent on the company, for example, by introducing fertility programs. And if HR comes along to fix this mess by introducing even more benefits, you know, obviously it doesn't take a doctorate to figure out what's going wrong. You're not going to solve this problem by introducing more and more benefits. But what this also demonstrates, I think, is that HR could quite easily re-establish their internal image, because all they would need to do is to get their hands dirty in addressing the root cause of the problem. They would have to speak out. They would have to speak out that the true reason for employees' unhappiness is not the absence of benefits, but the absence of sound managerial structures. But HR has let itself be degraded and has got into this position where they are perceived as a nanny that everyone calls for when the symptoms of bad organizational structures and bad organizational practices have arisen. And it's a bit like, you know, imagine you're building a house on a really shaky foundation with substandard building materials. And then obviously as a consequence, you've got all these cracks in the walls and you constantly have to call for the handyman to fix those cracks and to repaint the surfaces. And everyone knows that the real reason is that the architects messed up, you know, the builders were negligent, or whoever constructed this whole mess. So paying the handyman seems like a bit of a waste, right? It's a waste of resources. So again, don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming HR here. And I am convinced that every HR manager and every HR employee is just as smart and just as capable, as just as qualified as any other employee in the company is or is not. I'm not blaming individuals here. I'm pointing towards a systemic misinterpretation of cause and effect of happiness. And the problem is that this whole thing has turned into like a self-serving system where senior management and HR, they're kind of reinforcing their roles, right? So CEOs see HR as those who deal with employees' well-being, and HR has kind of happily taken on that role, and they just accept their fate, and they're just optimizing within that self-perpetuating system or narrative. And they've kind of let themselves get degraded to non-essential function. And that's why Gary Hamel can pull up a post like that or a tweet like that. And of course, the narrative is different. The official narrative, of course, is different. Officially, HR is doing crucial work, right? They're looking after the employees. But deep down, people can sense that it isn't working that way, right? Although more and more benefits are poured out and more internal services are developed and rolled out, none of them really seem to deliver on their promise. And everyone can sense that. And as I laid out earlier, the reason for this whole mess is that none of these things really focus on the true cause of unhappiness, but just on the symptoms. And the interesting thing is that if you look at companies that approach this whole question from a different perspective or a different angle, that they have absolutely no problem to retain staff or even to attract new staff, and even without any, or at least without that many benefits. And it's only logical, right? Because if people can actually do work they enjoy, if they can really see that their work makes a difference, then they have a feeling of happiness. You know, if they have true ownership, if they have real responsibility, if they don't need to be cared for with happiness programs because work cares for them directly, then happiness is a emergent result. So we don't have to foster it by introducing new programs. So the good news is you can set yourself apart from your competitors very easily. The only thing you need to do is, and I'm saying that as if it was, I mean, cognitively, it might be hard to get your head around this stuff at the beginning, but basically it's very easy. You just have to take these things more seriously and look at them from a different angle. And if, just imagine if HR went ahead and systematically assessed all those institutional structures that take ownership away from employees and then worked on eliminating those systems and replacing them with something better, then happiness could just result as a consequence. And then all of those happiness programs become absolutely obsolete, or they're just like, you know, the icing on the cake, but they're not really needed anymore. And I know companies that go as far as to get rid of HR as a function in its traditional way. They break HR up as a function, as a department. And instead what they do is they give full ownership into the teams. So the teams hire, the teams make HR decisions, they assess the need for further qualification, for building additional skills, etc. So they do all of that. And the interesting thing is if you organize your business in such a way, what happens is that teams develop a true demand for some of the operational tasks that are now being delivered by HR and that could then be delivered centrally. So you've got a pull effect instead of a push effect. You know, if you create a system in which the teams are responsible for all of that stuff and then not waiting for gifts being handed out from HR, then instead of HR pushing solutions into the business, the business is instead pulling solutions. And as a consequence, what emerges is small teams, you know, streamlined services or communities of interest, you sometimes could call them, that are delivering solutions to different parts of the value creation, that, you know, different teams that are actually needed in this periphery of the company. And, you know, all you have to retain in the center of the company is some basic routine functions like payroll or, I don't know, like carpool management, stuff like that. Simple things, routine work. But everything else is decentralized and managed by the teams themselves, which gives them all the ownership and changes the game. And then if you also look after work in the right way, which we address in different episodes, and I have spoken about a little bit here, then work itself serves as a delivery for happiness. So all you basically have to do is you have to put work back at the center stage. And then as a result, the need for fixing unhappiness disappears. Right, so that's the whole idea. And I'll leave you with that today. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, if you have publications you want me to cover that deserve a markup, please send them through. And make sure, by the way, I have received quite a few publications already from you guys, and I'm really grateful for it. Make sure they are English, because I know a big part of my audience at the moment is German. And some of you have sent through German articles, which I won't be covering. Make sure that they have a decent reach, because I want to dissect articles that reach a lot of people so I can make a bigger difference. And make sure that they are fairly recent. It doesn't mean I'm not going to also cover the odd article that's a bit older or video that's a bit older, but predominantly I'm going to try to look for fairly recent articles. So that's it for today. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful Easter, guys. Enjoy it. I hope you have some good time off, and I will see you again in 2 weeks' time. Take care.